Chapter 15.
Una and I headed away from the giant's cave, and we crossed paths with the trail of migrants a short while later. The caravan of animal people wasn't being very subtle, since they had to drag weapons and haul carts, and they moved at a slower pace than the two of us had on our own. May jerked her chin in greeting from the rear of the caravan, and I gave her a crisp salute before I followed Una over to where Dr. Kriya walked with a beaver man. The doctor and the older man kept a slow pace, and the big-toothed semi-aquatic mammal limped with each step.
We found two more ingredients,
Una announced with a proud grin.
Alex snuck beneath the nose of a sleeping giant. You said you would be safe,
the doctor gasped.
Una, we talked about this. Even with the help of the potion maker, it is highly unlikely you will be able to make a healing potion. It is possible, though,
Una argued with an earnest look, and her ears flattened against her head.
I will heal my father!
Of course you will, Una,
Dr. Kriya said in a softer tone, and she took the cat girl's hand in hers to squeeze it affectionately.
I merely want you to curtail your hopes. Do not get ahead of yourself or count eggs before they are laid. I understand.
Una sighed, but she pulled away from the doctor.
I won't share my joy with you.
You can always share it with me, I murmured as we turned away from the doctor to walk along the caravan of animal people. I love it when you get excited.
You excite me every instant of every day,
Una said with wide, serious eyes.
Want me to show you?
Once we get settled in the new safe haven, I said as I squeezed her hand. We need to stay on alert while everyone is on the move.
I will be patient if I must,
Una sighed, but then she flashed me a mischievous, fang-toothed smile.
For now.
Come on, let's go see how Miss Maggie is handling the journey. We traveled throughout the rest of the day, but with the slow progress the caravan made, we had to make camp at night. May and I set up a series of watch shifts to guard our perimeter, and several fires were lit between the rows of tents. Una and I shared a tent close to the others, who I considered to be leaders among the animal people, and I was pleased to see May set up her temporary dwelling near ours. The cuddly cat girl and I curled up on the sleeping pad and fell asleep easily, but I could hear May humming a tune in the next tent over. It was a comforting sound, and I sighed with contentment as the melody lulled me into slumber. It took us multiple days to reach the Sunrise Mountains, with the caravan of animal people and their wagons, and our progress slowed even further when we faced the uneven terrain of the foothills. Wheels getting stuck became a common occurrence, and it would have been a horrible place to get ambushed, so I found myself on high alert. By the end of the third day, we arrived at the opening to the caves the scouts had discovered. There were no signs of life anywhere nearby, but I could still smell a hint of giant in the air. The oversized man lived uncomfortably close to our current location, but he hadn't chased after us, so maybe he wasn't aggressive. The former citizens of Havenwood gazed around at the cave openings with a mixture of curiosity and fear. But then everyone burst into action and began to unload their carts.
Everyone wait a moment before you start picking a cave,
I said in a loud voice to halt the people beginning to unpack.
We should do a sweep first.
Is it that dirty?
A voice from the caravan asked.
It's a cave. I'm sure it's plenty dirty. But what I meant was we need to check to make sure nothing else lives here first.
May, Una, and I approached the mouth of the caverns, and I gazed up at the face of the mountain. With the multiple openings on the side of the slope, the network of caves almost resembled a giant skull. It was a little ominous-looking, but perhaps that would only serve to scare off our enemies. The opening in the mountain was wide, roughly 100 paces across, and around 3 times my height. The ground was dirt and rocks, but I could see flat rock outcroppings that made natural shelves a short distance inside the entrance. The ceiling of the first cavern appeared to be stable, and the walls curled slightly inward, but it looked safe enough.
I'll light a torch,
I said as I reached for the fire-making supplies I'd begun to carry in a hip pouch similar to Una's.
It's going to be dark in there.
Caves normally are,
May pointed out with a wink.
All right, smarty pants.
I snorted with amusement as I struck a spark in the direction of the torch, and it immediately caught fire. The flames illuminated the mouth of the cavern, and I got a closer look at our possible new home. The main cavern could have fit all of us comfortably, and I envisioned tables lining the open space. I led the way further into the cave, and my two companions followed behind me. A draft pulled on the flames of my torch, and I arched my eyebrow in curiosity as I gazed into the shadows. There was a glimmer of light in the distance, but that was impossible. There couldn't be light further inside the cavern. I walked forward with careful steps, with Una and May right behind me, and I peered around at the curved walls of the cave with narrowed eyes. The first cavern shifted into a tunnel at the back of the space, and we followed the path into the shadows. The light at the end grew bigger and brighter with each step we took, but nothing could have prepared me for what I saw next. We drew closer to the end of the tunnel, and I had to blink in the bright light of day before my vision focused and I could look around. Wind tugged at the tufts of my hair that hung around my ears, and my head turned upward. The rainbow sky greeted my eyes through the opening in the top of the mountain, and I realized it was hollow. My eyes traveled down from the opening at the top of the peak, and my mouth gaped open when I saw the forest below me. We stood on a rock outcropping, and a ramp circled down to the trees roughly 50 feet beneath us. I even heard the sound of running water. It was like the Garden of Eden hidden away inside a hollow mountain, and a shit-eating grin spread across my face.
"This is fucking awesome!"
I yelled, and the echo of my voice circled the hollow of the peak.
"Let us explore further,"
May said, but her eyes were full of excitement as they swept around the interior of the massive cavern.
"Look, there's a way down,"
Una said, as she gestured to the rock ramp I'd noticed before. May and I followed the cat girl as she went down the naturally formed ramp. But it was hard to keep my eyes focused on the path ahead with so much to look at all around me. There were smaller caverns in the interior wall of the hollow peak, like a loofah spotted with a patchwork of caves, and I envisioned them as the homes for the flying bird people. The ramp led down to the slightly uneven ground, where trees, shrubs, vines, and other various plants grew. I didn't see a single face on any of the vegetation, and I breathed a sigh of relief. It seemed we were finally safe from the minions of darkness, but we had to go to the darkest place in the area to find it.
"There's so many trees,"
Una breathed as her violet orbs expanded to an impossible degree.
"How do they grow inside the cave? I believe this used to be filled with fire,"
May mused as she gaped at the circular opening far above our heads.
"Fire can eat even stone."
"Oh, like a volcano,"
I surmised as realization dawned on me. We were standing in the ancient remains of a volcanic mountain, but with the trees growing inside, I didn't think it was active anymore.
"It is beautiful,"
Una said, but her eyes never stopped moving around the space.
"Can we please live here, Alex? Please, oh please?"
"I believe that's the point of bringing the whole town with us. I'm glad you like it. Do you want to explore some more, or should we go tell the others it's safe to come in?"
"Let's tell everyone to come explore it with us."
Una bounced up and down on the balls of her feet, and her tail flicked excitedly behind her.
"Oh, Alex, it's so perfect. Thank you so much."
"Well, the scouts are the ones who actually found it,"
I reminded the excitable cat girl with a self-conscious blush.
"Oh, hush. It was your idea to send the scouts. You are a leader now, Alex the Dreamer. Are you prepared for your task?"
"The best I can be," I shrugged. "At least we don't have to worry about clover cards showing up on our doorstep at any moment. We can all breathe a little easier, and tonight, we celebrate."
"Giggle juice for all!"
May clapped her hands as she clamped her pipe in the corner of her mouth. We returned to the top of the ramp and went through the tunnel to the large entryway cavern. The rest of the former citizens of Havenwood were gathered just inside the opening, and they all hurried forward when they noticed our approach.
"It's safe!"
I announced with a broad grin stretched across my face, and I swung the torch in a wide arch above my head.
"And it's awesome!"
Everyone cheered and rushed toward the tunnel we'd just exited, and I could hear the echoes of their surprised gasps when they hit the open space of the hollow interior.
"Wow! Look at this! Over here!"
Everyone sounded very pleased with their new home, so I slung my arm across Una's shoulders and flashed my feline companion a contented smile.
"Welcome home, babe.
I placed a quick kiss on her forehead, and the cat girl leaned into my touch.
What should we call it?
A new name for our new safe haven,
Una asked as she tilted her head.
Oh, there you go. We could call it New Haven.
I like it.
Una grinned wide, and her fangs protruded at an adorable angle.
New Haven, the perfect place to go on new adventures within the safety of your arms.
Miss Maggie and some of the others built a large bonfire in the forest growing inside the hollow mountain. And then a mystery meat was spitted over the flames. I was curious about how well the pig chef could actually cook without the magic of the Havenwood kitchen, but I had total faith in her ability to feed the masses. The pig lady's daughter stayed close to her mother's side, and the pair stoked the flame until it blazed into life. The meat tasted like turducken, and I wondered where Miss Maggie had gotten it from. Had the pig lady hunted during our travels across all the land, or was this meat brought from the kitchens of Havenwood? After dinner, the residents of New Haven danced, drank, and sang the night away until the neon green moon was visible through the circular opening high overhead. Una and I sat cross-legged on the dirt next to the roaring flames of the bonfire, and the cat girl spread out the recipe for the healing potion once more.
We have the drool of a giant, the wings of a bat bee, and the tail of a sniffer snatcher,
Una said as she ran her finger across the printed gibberish.
Now, we just need to obtain the sap of a talking tree, water that runs backwards, and the spot from a frog's belly.
That sounds like nonsense, I pointed out with an amused smirk. But I have total faith we shall find it all.
When?
Una asked as she wiggled with anticipation.
As soon as New Haven is okay without me. I don't want to desert the people who are counting on me.
You're the dreamer,
Una said, as if this explained everything.
You can do both.
I'll do my best, Una.
Then giggle juice was passed around, and my cup seemed bottomless for a while, and it was early in the morning when Una and I crawled into our tent. We had drunken sex, and Una was even more wild than usual. Then we passed out in a tangled knot of limbs and tail as the sun began to heat the exterior of the mountain. Hours later, I crawled out of our temporary dwelling and stood with hands on my hips as I surveyed our new home in the light of a fresh day. The air was crisp and tasty, but it didn't induce a wave of giggles, so I assumed it was safe to breathe. The sounds of birds chirping and other movement through the trees that grew in the hollowed-out mountain echoed around the cone shape, and I inhaled deeply. The secret little forest was the perfect place for the animal people to build their new homes, and there was more than enough room for everyone to have some privacy. It would take some work to get some of the systems we were accustomed to in place, like showers and a kitchen, but I had faith in the ingenuity of New Haven's residents.
Good morrow, dreamer!
May greeted with a friendly smile as she approached me.
I was just headed to the stream to freshen up.
That sounds lovely. Let me wake up Una and we'll go with you.
Do not dally. I want to be fresh and clean for today's training session.
Una and I are going to be leaving on another adventure soon, I said in a cautious voice. Any chance you'd want to go with us?
I do love a good quest,
May said instantly with an emphatic nod.
Count me in.
I'll add the tally, I countered with a wink. But in reality, relief swept through me, since I didn't want to separate myself from the dodo woman unless necessary. Not until I got to know her a little bit better, anyway.
I'll look for you at the water's edge,
May said with a wave, before she trotted off in the direction of the stream.
I'll be there!
I hollered at her back, but then I dipped my head inside the tent to find Una's wide purple eyes sleepily blinking back at me.
Did you have any dreams, my dreamer?
Una asked in a sleepy voice as she rubbed her eyes with the back of her furry hands.
I hope you dreamed of me.
You're the best dream I've ever had. May went to splash off in the stream and invited us to join her. Care to rinse off with me and the dodo woman?
Sounds lovely.
Una yawned, and her tail stiffened behind her like it was doing its own morning stretches.
I cannot wait to have a bed to sleep in again. The sleeping pad is nice, and I'm glad we have something between us and the ground, but...
It's not the most comfortable place to sleep. I get it. As soon as we get all the ingredients for the healing potion, then we will focus on building an awesome house for you and I to live in together.
The two of us crawled back out of the tent, and I took Una's hand in mine as we walked in the direction of the sound of running water. I still hadn't fully explored the stream that ran through the hollowed-out mountain we now resided in, but the others had attested to its crisp, cold nature. May stood waist-deep in the stream with her back to us when we approached, and the dodo woman splashed happily in the water.
"Come in and feel the waves,"
May said without turning around.
"They're glorious."
I was mesmerized by the pale curve of May's bare back, and she'd released her long white hair to shimmer above the water. Her shoulders were slender, but the muscle definition was easy to see, even from a distance. I wanted her to turn around more than anything, but I supposed I'd just have to wait to see the rest of her when I got into the water, so I began to strip off my clothes. Una was a step ahead of me, but she left her orange and purple striped stockings on, and they curled around her ass cheeks like roving hands. The pale, creamy hue of her lower back stood in contrast to the vibrant purple-blue of her tail, and she flashed me a mischievous grin over her shoulder.
"Come and get me,"
Una taunted in a husky voice. "Oh, it is on!" I flung off the remainder of my clothes and hurried over to the catgirl before I scooped her petite form into my arms. Then I carried her into the water with me, and she giggled as her hands wrapped around the nape of my neck. I waded in until I was waist deep, a few feet downstream from May, and then I lifted Una higher into the air.
"Do cats like water?"
I asked with an arched eyebrow before I unceremoniously dropped her into the stream, and the cat girl screeched as she splashed into the water.
"Alex!"
Una reprimanded me with an amused twinkle in her eyes after she came to her feet. She swished her hand into the water, and a small wave splashed toward me.
"Of course cats like water. It is necessary for life, after all."
"On Earth, most cats don't like to get wet," I said as I splashed her back.
"You have feline friends on your Earth?"
May asked as she crossed the distance to us. Her hair was pulled across her breasts, and the tendrils covered her completely to the waist, but I could see the curves of her hips and the toned muscles along her ribs. May looked like a mermaid vixen, half in, half out of the water, and I swallowed hard.
"Not friends, necessarily," I said,
but then images of smiling cats leading me away from home flashed through my mind. That was weird.
"Are you friends with any other dodos?"
May questioned, and there was an eager look in her ice-blue eyes.
"You're the first one I've met," I assured her with a grin.
"Me as well. Dodos are rare ever since the Great Turmoil."
"That is because my kind were some of the first to rush into the heat of battle,"
May declared as she puffed out her chest proudly.
"There is a long legacy of the bravery of my forebears, and I wish to do it sound justice by my own actions."
"You've done a fantastic job, as far as I can tell. You have been helping the people of Havenwood, even though they were all strangers to you not that long ago."
"I have done naught but my duty."
"Still, I am grateful for your presence. I consider you my first dodo friend."
"It is an honor and a privilege, Dreamer,"
May said with a dip of her head. The three of us finished splashing off in the cool stream, and then we laid out in the sun to air dry. I kept my gaze politely away from May's nude form before she pulled on some frilly white underclothes, but I couldn't help noticing the way the fabric became translucent when wet, or the ruffled gray-white feathers of her tail. I wanted to blatantly stare at the strange dodo woman, but I also wanted her to think highly of me, so I sighed as I cast my eyes to the ground. After the three of us had dried off and gotten dressed, we returned to the campground where everyone had erected their temporary dwellings. A fire was roaring in the pit, and animal people scurried all around in every direction. There was a calm air to their movements, though, with a dash of excitement. Everyone was happy with our new home. I found Miss Maggie and Dr. Kriya beside the fire with the remains of their meal on the ground in front of them, and I gave the pair a friendly wave as I approached.
"What's for breakfast?"
"Leftovers,"
Miss Maggie grunted as she pointed to a pot being warmed by the coals.
"From last night's dinner."
"Lovely,"
Una said as she clapped her hands together.
"That mystery meat was delicious."
"My final craving from the kitchen,"
Miss Maggie sighed, and a bittersweet smile stretched her lips.
"I will miss it."
"Hello, Dreamer,"
Zeedee squeaked as she hopped over to us.
Good morning.
Lena inched out as she crawled across the distance to us. Hey, cuties, I greeted, and I quickly moved to pick up the slow sloth woman. She wrapped her arms around my neck as she slid into her favorite position on my hip, and we exchanged a wide smile before I turned back to the others.
The dreamer wishes to depart on an expedition,
May announced once we were all seated with meals in hand.
And I have decided to go with him. I suggest bolstering the defenses before we leave.
Leaving so soon?
Miss Maggie frowned.
But New Haven has only just been founded. We need you here.
I'll make sure everything is squared away before I go, I assured her in a calm voice. I'm not abandoning you. I'm merely helping Una gather the last ingredients needed for the healing potion.
That's a very dangerous task,
Dr. Kriya pointed out with a worried frown of her own.
Are you sure you and Una are both healed enough to participate in such a challenge?
Who else is going to do it? I asked with one coolly arched eyebrow.
What else do you need to get?
Zidi asked as she bounced onto my knee.
3 things. Sap from the talking tree, water from the backward stream, and a spot from a clever frog.
Oh, I know where that is,
May and Zidi both said at the same time, and everyone gaped at the 2 ladies.
Which one?
Una asked as her eyes filled with hope.
The talking tree.
The backward stream.
Awesome, I grinned. This is going to be a lot easier than I expected. Half the battle is finding the damn things in this crazy dream world.
Don't get ahead of yourself, dreamer. Each item will come with its own host of challenges. But you are correct. Locating things in all the land is always the most arduous of them.
I know a frog,
Lena said in a slow voice, but then she cleared her throat.
He is clever.
You just talked so fast! Are your opposition effects wearing off?
Slightly,
Lena said with a sideways smile.
But I can lead you to the clever frog.
You could fix her with some of your magic. I bet if she drank your seed, she'd...
Let's wait for Dr. Kriya's research.
If that is your wish.
Una shrugged. So, Lena and May are both going with us, I informed Una in an excited voice, before I flashed the fur bay my most charming smile. Will you come too, Zidi?
Yes, yes, yes!
The fur bay bounced up and down on my knee, and she caught several inches of air each time.
Thank you, thank you, thank you! I won't let you down, Dreamer.
Everyone can totally just call me Alex. I don't need to be treated like a chosen one every second of every day.
Do you stop being the Dreamer sometimes?
Una asked with a confused tilt of her head, and her tail curled into the shape of a question mark. I don't think so. I shook my head. I just meant it gets to be a little weird to be called the Dreamer all the time. I'm used to being called by my name, Alex.
We know your name already. Why make such a dramatic introduction now?
I was getting nowhere. So I decided to let it go. I'd just have to get used to everyone referring to me as the special chosen one until I left this strange dream world. Would I ever leave all the land? Did I even want to? This place felt more and more like home with every passing moment, but I still wasn't sure how long my hallucinations would last, if they were even hallucinations. Days had passed, and I'd slept several times, so it was becoming less and less likely that I was imagining all of this. I shook my head to dispel the racing thoughts, and then I turned to Miss Maggie and the doctor. I want there to be watchers in the air, water, and at the mouth of the cave at all times. Organize volunteers to rotate out so no one gets too sleepy on duty.
Yes, Dreamer.
Miss Maggie grunted with a dip of her head. We also need to start building living structures, I continued in a commanding tone. Dwellings and gathering spaces. The beaver people could help with that.
I'll need a warm, dry place for my victims.
Everyone should work together to build the medical center before any of the other structures. The patients and victims should be our first priority, since they can't defend themselves.
It will be done as you ask, Dreamer,
the doctor murmured in a pleased tone. It seemed the 2 mother figures were happy with my instructions, and I felt confident they would be able to run things smoothly in my absence. They'd been doing it in Havenwood long before I'd arrived, after all. After we finished our meal and the discussions about our quest, my four lady companions packed up their temporary dwellings and prepared for our departure. Dr. Kriya gave me a few potions just in case we ran into trouble, but with the additions of May, Lena, and Ziti, I was sure our quest was going to be a breeze. By the time we were ready to head out, a small crowd of well-wishers had gathered near the natural stone ramp, and I had to shake more than a few hands as we passed through the residence of New Haven.
"We should befriend some Frisians,"
Ziti squeaked from her position upon my shoulder.
"That way we won't have to walk all the way across all the land to find the ingredients we need."
"What are Frisians?"
"The creatures you called horse things,"
Una supplied in a cheerful tone.
"Did I not tell you that?"
"Nope. But yeah, that's a great idea, Ziti. Do you happen to know where we could find any?"
"I sure do. I was talking to my family about it as I packed. They encountered some not far from here when they were exploring the mountains."
"Why would the horse things be in the mountains?"
"There could be a plethora of reasons. Perhaps they found the protected mountain valley, since some of the best grass can grow on the sides of a slope. Maybe they are hiding from common enemies, and they may desire to form an alliance with us. We will simply have to ask them ourselves."
"I don't think they talk."
"I can speak to them,"
Ziti squeaked as she bounced up and down on my shoulder. "Which way should we go?" I asked as excitement bloomed in my chest. I imagined me and my companions riding the strange horse-like creatures across the landscape, and it sounded awesome.
"To the north,"
Ziti said, and the Furbay's shivers of excitement slowly calmed.
"Onward and upward,"
May declared, and she stomped forward with a purposeful gait. I shook my head in amusement as I followed behind the dodo woman with Una's hand in mine. Lena remained wrapped around my torso, and her warmth was a comforting presence on my side. Ziti nuzzled against my neck, and I could feel her talons gripping the fabric of my tunic as we trudged across the rocky landscape. The frisky cat girl shot me flirtatious winks every so often as we walked, but the determined dodo woman led the way without sparing me a single look. She was of single-minded focus, and it seemed there would be no distracting her. It was for the best, though, so I took a deep breath and refocused on the path ahead. We walked around boulders the size of cars, climbed up crevices, and traversed the rocky terrain with careful steps. Then we scurried up the rim of the valley, and we crossed over to the other side to find a field of flowering clovers. Munching on the grass with serene flicks of their tails was a herd of the Frisians, and I gaped in awe at the strange creatures. Just like the ones we'd encountered when we'd ambushed the clover cards, the horse-like creatures had two prong-like horns on their heads, and four eyes blinked about in all directions. The animals were monochrome in color, but instead of black and white squares, these ones were striped in zigzags, almost like a zebra. But they still looked almost transparent when they walked beneath the sunlight. Ziti immediately hopped down from my shoulder and rushed across the field of clovers, so I was left with little choice but to follow behind her. The four of us walked in the Furbay's wake, but our steps were more cautious than her ambitious bounces.
"Tuck, ruck, nook, nook,"
the Furbay squeaked in a loud voice as she approached the Frisians. I didn't understand a word of the gibberish, but the horse-like creatures all neighed before they circled around the Furbay like they were going to have a meeting. I hurried across the distance to them, and I slipped cautiously between the bodies of the animals before I kneeled down at Ziti's side. May and Una squeezed into the circle behind me, and then we all stared at each other. The tension in the air was palpable, and I had a feeling we were on probation with the horse things. They would allow us to say our piece, but I could tell they would chase us off if they didn't like what they heard.
"Nuck, ruck, zuck, tuck,"
Ziti spouted off some more gibberish, but I merely plastered a friendly smile on my face as I gazed into the multitude of eyes before me. Then, one of the strange-looking creatures stepped forward a couple of paces and tossed its head.
"Zuck, zuck, tuck, nuck, ruck,"
Ziti persisted, but the creature tossed its head again. This continued for a few more moments, but then the Frisian let out a loud neigh, and Ziti giggled. "Is that good?"
"Very good,"
the Furbay replied.
"They have agreed to help us. They heard the dreamer had arrived from a different herd, but they aren't sure if it's you yet."
"That's fair, I suppose," I said, as I peered at the Frisians out of the corner of my eye. They seemed friendly enough, and if Ziti trusted them, then so did I. Plus, they were our best shot at getting across all the land swiftly. I bowed low to the Frisian who'd spoken to Ziti, and it tossed its head in reply. A strange guttural sound escaped the creature's lips, and I shot Ziti a questioning glance.
"He says you are welcome to ride him,"
the Furbay translated.
"He is the leader, so it would be appropriate."
"Very well. But we really only need 3 rides. One for May, one for Una, and one for you, Lena, and me."
"I will tell him,"
Ziti said. And then she uttered some more gibberish in the direction of the Frisian herd leader. They exchanged a few nonsense words, and then the Furbay bounced twice like she was nodding.
"He says he will grant us 3 members of his herd as you requested. But since you do not need all of them, then he will stay in the valley with the remainder of the herd."
"That sounds like a good plan." I dipped my head politely at the head horse thing, and then I surveyed the rest of the gathered herd. I scrutinized them closely until I determined the 3 strongest-looking ones, and I pointed them out individually. A few moments later, we were all mounted bareback on the Frisian creatures, and they exchanged a few words with their leader before we trotted away from the majority of the herd. The wind blew in my face, and Lena clung tightly to my chest as we trotted over the rim and down the slope. It was exhilarating how much faster we were able to travel atop the steed's back, and it made me never want to walk again. We traveled the rest of the day, made camp that night, then continued the next morning. At first I was worried the horse-like creatures would escape in the middle of the night, since we didn't tie them down to anything. But Ziti assured me they were staying with their temporary herd until the mission was completed. I trusted the Furbay's word, so I put the thought out of my mind and focused on the search for water running backward. Ziti had visited the stream that flowed in the wrong direction already, so she gave us directions past the Mushroom Valley to the canyon on the other side. It took us several days to reach our destination, and we remained vigilant as we drew closer to the Clover Fortress. We crossed the road where we'd ambushed the Clover Cards, and the Frisians tossed their heads with discomfort. The smell of inky blood was still strong in the air, but it had a sour, aged odor to it. We were close to the spot where we'd fought off the animated card assholes, but I gave the location a wide berth so the steeds wouldn't freak out on me. Then we approached the canyon, and it was like the world suddenly ended. The ground dropped off abruptly, and erosion threatened the edges. Plants still grew along every angle of the rock face, but we stayed far away from the ledge. Ziti directed us in a northeastern direction from that point, and I heard the sound of water before I saw the stream, but it was enough to cause excitement to bloom in my chest. We'd been traveling for days with little pause, and we'd finally arrived at our destination. We dismounted from the Frisians' backs, and then we continued the rest of the way on foot, as the sound of running water grew louder with each step we took. Once we finally came up to the stream, I stood and blinked at the scene before me for a long moment. Then I shook my head to clear my vision, but my eyes still saw the same thing. The water flowed up from the depths of the canyon, and fish flew overhead with long flappers on either side of their scaled bodies. The fish splashed in and out of the waves as they made their way up over the rim of the canyon, just like Una had said.
"Here we are,"
Ziti squeaked.
"I present the backward stream."
"You did great, Ziti," I complimented with a proud smile. "Thank you."
"Yes, thank you, little Ziti,"
Una said as she bounced up and down on the balls of her feet.
"All we have to do is scoop some up and we'll have one more ingredient."
"Where did that blasted bottle disappear to?"
May rifled through her pack for a moment, and then she brought out an empty potion container.
"Ah, here it is. Already been cleaned of the toxic poisons it previously contained."
I accepted the empty bottle with a grateful smile, removed Lena from around my chest, and then made my way over to the stream. But the second I began to approach the backward-running water, the flying fish swooped down out of the air to flap above my head. I covered my head with my arms as I dashed through the flock of flying fish, and the wet, slimy feeling of their scales against my skin urged me forward at an even faster pace. Then I was at the water's edge, but the fish continued to harry my every move as I dipped the bottle into the stream. The current nearly swept the bottle from my grasp, but I maintained my grip despite the distracting fish flying in circles around my head. They began to toss their bodies out of the air at me, and the fish smacking into me almost knocked me into the waves.
"Alex, watch out!"
Una called from a safe distance.
"It'll be fish for dinner if they hurt you."
"I don't think they can. I shouted through the sound of flapping wings. I finished scooping the liquid up into the no longer empty container, and then I fought my way back through the flying fish to my companions. The fish stopped their flight and flopped into the foamy water, and I breathed a sigh of relief. They were like the guardians of the water, but they didn't do the best job of it.
All right, I breathed as I held up the filled bottle. Whew, another ingredient down. What should we tackle next?
The talking tree is a little way south of here, below the Mushroom Valley.
The frog is near Havenwood,
Lena reminded me. Which is closer? I asked as I looked from one to the other.
The talking tree,
Una said with a decisive nod.
Then we can convince the frog to hand over a spot on the way back to the Sunrise Mountains.
Sounds like a plan, I grinned. Everyone mount up, no time to lose.
We rode until long after the sun had set, but the stars and a neon green moon lit the way enough for us to continue our trek for a time. When I could tell my companion's energy began to wane, I called for a halt, and everyone sighed gratefully. Then we made camp in the dark, but we were too exhausted to start a fire or cook a meal. We'd packed enough travel rations to get us through several days, but I was definitely missing the magic of Havenwood's kitchen as I fell asleep that night. Maybe we could pay the Sequoia a visit after speaking to the frog. The five of us remounted our steeds early the next morning, and we traveled all day without pause along the outskirts of the Mushroom Valley. I kept the road through the valley in my peripheral vision, but I didn't want to travel too openly along the path used by the Clover Cards. We didn't encounter any other people or enemies as we traversed the fungi forest, but an anxious tension began to permeate my companions as the light began to fade. The growing darkness caused shadows to lengthen, and Zeedee was shivering in the cold, so I bundled her up in the folds of my tunic. The sun was casting its final rays across the rainbow sky when we left the Mushroom Valley and entered a dark forest. A path ran between the tree trunks, and this was the direction May led us in. We dipped below the branches and entered a world of shadows, and I could feel the fear radiating from Lena and Zeedee. "It's okay, ladies," I murmured in a comforting voice, since I didn't want to attract any nightmares. "You're with the dreamer, remember? Nothing bad is going to happen to you. We'll get this sap and be on our way."
"Promise?"
Zeedee squeaked, and I ruffled her fur with a gentle finger.
"Absolutely." I grinned down at the furbay and the sloth lady. "It's going to be a piece of cake."
"It has been a while since I visited my old friend,"
May said in a thoughtful tone as she rode ahead of me. Her hips swayed with every movement of her steed's flanks, and her hat was perched at a precarious angle, but she didn't seem to notice.
"I hope my absence has not angered him overly."
"You know a talking tree?"
Una gasped. "The tree could be mad at you?" I followed up as I felt a knot form in my stomach. Maybe this wouldn't be the piece of cake I'd imagined it to be.
"He will be upset that I haven't spoken to him in quite some time. But he is a tree. He cannot harm us very much."
"Very much?" I pressed, but then another thought struck me. "Wait, aren't the trees all loyal to the Dark King now? What makes you think we can trust this one?"
"Oh, have no fear, Alex the Dreamer,"
May said in a reassuring tone as she waved her hand.
"I have thoroughly vetted all of my friends for Shadows of Darkness. He will be pleased to meet such an esteemed character. It's been a long time since we have had a hero in these parts, and while I've done my best to fill that role, there is nothing quite like authentic heroism."
"I find you to be very heroic."
"You have done so much for us,"
Una added with an emphatic nod.
"You're pretty heroic too, Una," I informed the cat girl, and I flashed her a proud grin. "I'm glad you're all with me on this quest. It wouldn't be the same without every single one of you."
"I am happy to be with you, Dreamer,"
Lena said in a slightly less slow voice than usual.
"Ditto,"
Zeedee added as she snuggled deeper into my tunic.
"Onward, May, to the talking tree."
May tipped her hat and she led us forward with squared shoulders. We traveled through the shadows of the forest for a while, and my steed seemed more than capable of finding his way in the dark, so I sat back and let it continue to follow May's mount. Una flashed me wide, white-toothed smiles every few paces, and her purple eyes scanned the forest around us with curiosity. A short while later, May pulled to a halt on the edge of a clearing, and the dodo woman dismounted her steed. Una and I followed suit, and then we huddled together.
"The tree stands in that clearing,"
May informed me.
"But he is probably sleeping right now. He will be annoyed with us if we rouse him too early, so we should make camp nearby and wait till morning to greet him."
"Sounds good to me," I nodded. We made camp quickly and quietly so as to not disturb the talking tree's slumber, and then we slept soundly until the sun lit up the forest floor the next morning. Zidi, Lena, Una, and May hurried around the campsite preparing food and putting away our tents, and I stood helplessly watching them with nothing to do. I finally decided to practice with my sword for a bit while they finished their tasks, but as soon as I'd gone through a couple of drills, my companions hollered that they were ready to meet the talking tree. We walked as a group toward the clearing where the tree stood, but I allowed May to take the lead again. The dodo woman paused for a moment at the edge of the clearing, but then she lifted her chin and marched decisively forward. We followed in her wake, but I peered curiously around her shoulder at the tree growing in the middle of the field of grass. It looked like an ancient oak tree, and just like the smiling trees in the happy fields, a face was carved into the wooden bark of its trunk. This face wasn't smiling, though, and a stern frown graced the tree's countenance, so I wasn't confident he was open to having visitors just then. May marched forward despite the grumpy expression on the tree's face, and the dodo woman waved in greeting as she approached.
"Wizened ancestor tree, I have brought visitors from across the realm to witness your great knowledge."
"May, where have you been?"
A stern male voice echoed from the trunk of the tree.
"Present your peoples. Take your time, I'm not going anywhere." "It's all right, you can laugh. That was a joke."
I chuckled nervously and ran my fingers through my hair, and May turned to flourish her arms toward me in a regal gesture.
"This, wise one, is the dreamer of prophecy."
May's eyes were bright with pride as she introduced me.
"You may refer to him as Alex."
Then May introduced the rest of my companions to the ancient tree, and we all bowed one by one before we sat cross-legged in the grass in front of the trunk face.
"I appreciate you bringing visitors to see me, May, but I wished you would have come sooner. I have been very lonely here alone in the field. You promised you would come earlier, but I suppose that is the word of a bird. So flighty and unreliable."
The tree continued to ramble for a while, and we all exchanged glances. How were we supposed to get some sap from this talking tree if we couldn't get it to shut up long enough to ask for it? I took a deep, calming breath, and I listened to the tree's words as the sun traveled across the sky. Una grew bored after a while, and she began to pluck at the stems of grass by her legs and braid them in intricate patterns. Lena and Zidi started to fall asleep in my arms, and I struggled to stay focused myself. May had no such trouble, and the dodo woman nodded as she listened attentively. She murmured words of encouragement and acknowledgement under her breath, and she didn't seem bothered at all by the tree's selfish ranting. I suppose it had been a while since the tree received visitors. The sun was beginning to set once again, and my stomach grumbled loudly in complaint, but the tree talked on. After a while longer, I could take no more of the ceaseless chatter, and I cleared my throat to get the ancient plant's attention.
"If you don't mind the interruption," I said with my most charming smile, "we are actually here for a reason. We need some of your sap. Is there anything we can give in exchange for it?"
"Dear Alex the Dreamer, you have given me hours of attention. That is all I could ever ask for. My sap comes from my mouth, and I've been working up a bunch. Here, come help yourself."
Then the tree opened its mouth wide, and I saw the sticky sap stretch between the wooden lips. Inside its mouth-like opening resembled the hollow interior of a log, and I wondered just how long this tree had stood in this spot. Lena pulled an empty potion bottle from my pack and handed it to me, and I flashed my companions a triumphant smile as I scooped up some of the sticky liquid. "Another ingredient down, one more left." Thank you so much, Sir Tree, I said with a low bow. I apologize for leaving so soon, but we really must get going before it gets too late.
Thank you for spending the day with me, the tree replied,
and his wooden lips stretched into a grin.
Please return more frequently.
We will!
We all promised, as we waved goodbye to the talking tree. The five of us returned to our mounts, and we managed to travel a good distance in the dark before we came to a halt. We had one ingredient left to acquire, and it was on the way back to more familiar territory. My companions and I arrived at the pool below the familiar waterfall the following evening, and the sounds of insects chirping in the bushes were comforting. We dismounted and allowed the Frisians to wander around in search of a snack while we approached the water. Lena climbed down from my torso to lead the way to a bush along the edge of the pool, furthest away from the waterfall. The churned-up foam lingered around the rim of the pond, and lily pads grew where the water was calmer.
"Hello, friend,"
Lena said as she stuck her head inside the bush.
"Come meet the dreamer."
"Can it be?"
a masculine voice croaked, but then the large frog hopped out of the bush to stand before us.
"Has the dreamer's coming taken place already?"
The frog was yellow with red spots, and its eyes had narrow, horizontal slits for pupils. The giant amphibian was roughly the size of a German shepherd, and in any other circumstances, it would have freaked me the fuck out. As it was, I swallowed down my discomfort and approached the talking frog with a friendly smile.
"Hello, Sir Frog," I said with a bow of my head. "It is a pleasure to meet you. I am here on urgent business. We are looking for one of your spots."
"One of my spots?"
The frog narrowed his eyes.
"Nothing comes for free, dreamer."
"What is the price I must pay?"
I asked. The large yellow-red frog was silent for a long moment as he considered me through narrowed eyes. His tongue darted around me, caught an insect, and then whipped back inside the creature's mouth. But finally he nodded.
"Answer my riddle correctly,"
the frog said in a serious tone, and he hopped a step closer to stare up at me.
"Let's see if the dreamer has brains."
"I assure you I do," I said with an amused smirk. "Lay the riddle on me. I can figure it out."
The frog cleared his throat.
"The tale as old as our spinning globe, these four sentinels long stand opposed. Locked in a battle of endless days, when one shall leave, another stays. Spinning the wheel and always on the run, trapped in the cycle until time is done. One a beacon of endless light, another the harbinger of the long dark night. Balanced perfectly betwixt each other, if you don't like the weather, just wait for another. What am I?"
I stood and blinked at the talking frog for a long moment as his words repeated in my head several times. "Night, light," I murmured as I considered what the answer could be. I didn't know much about all the land, so it could be a trick getting it right, but something was itching in my brain. Cycle, balance, and the weather. Realization dawned on me, and I snapped my fingers.
"Aha! I got it!"
I grinned.
"The seasons!"
"That is the correct response,"
the frog replied with widened eyes.
"You truly are a powerful thinker. I shall gift you with one of my spots, but you have to pick the correct one."
Oh boy, another guessing game. Still, I felt confident in my ability to figure out which spot he'd be willing to part with, so I cast a quick glance over his person before I pointed to the spot on his stomach.
"That one," I declared with a triumphant grin.
"Very good, dreamer,"
the frog said with a bob of his head, and then he reared back to peel the spot off his flesh. He didn't seem to be harmed by this process, and I wondered if he would grow a new one or not. I tucked the spot into my hip pouch, and I shook the frog's slimy hand.
"Thank you very much,"
I said as I dipped my head into another respectful bow. "Because of you, all the land will be saved from the opposition effects of the potions." I turned to my companions and did a little victory dance.
"You did it, Alex!"
Una cheered as she jumped up and down, and her tail swished excitedly through the air.
"We have all the ingredients needed."
"Yep, now all we need is the potion maker."
We'd completed our quest to acquire all the necessary ingredients in the healing potion, but the next part would be even harder. I was more determined than ever before to do everything in my power to save the people of all the land, and I flashed my companions a shit-eating grin. Time to get back to New Haven! May saluted, Una nodded, Zeedee bounced, and Lena slowly grinned wider and wider. I knew, without a shadow of a doubt, my loyal companions and I could handle anything together.